Welcome to this week's episode of Seagull Eagle, where Brighton and Palace fans come together for brutal honesty, unexpected agreement, and occasional bickering.
The Premier League season may be over, but this podcast is still flying high.
We've got our brand new feature, Fight or Flight, where we ask the big question, should we cling on to our stars or cash in before they bolt? And of course, it wouldn't be the off-season without transfer talk.
In this week's episode, we're diving headfirst into the season that was, with our quick-fire opinions on how both clubs fared. So thanks for tuning in, and don't forget to follow our socials and press that subscribe button to be the first to know when the next episode lands.
So let's get started before another star player gets tempted away.
This is Seagull Eagle. Good evening, Neil. Have you had a good week?
Good evening, Andy. Yes.
It was very formal, wasn't it?
It was. I felt like I was in an interview for a moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very good, thank you. It's been a lovely week.
Good.
I'm a little bit bored, I can't lie. Now the football's finished, it feels a little bit empty, my life.
It is a bit weird, actually, because, yeah, I've come over to the studio without a match review. And I feel like I haven't done my homework. It's a bit weird, isn't it? It's a bit of a weird time. But do you know what, though? An exciting period, actually, because I think from my perspective, this is actually one of my favourite, it's a weird thing to say, but it's one of my favourite times of year, that transfer window opening, that whole kind of, you shut the door on what happened last year and you kind of look to the future, and it almost, it's like the reset of anxiety and optimism and all the other stuff that goes with it, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the greatest things about football. Yeah. You have loads of disappointments, but you know that you can just start again. And in the meantime, let's be honest, we've still got plenty to talk about.
Loads.
Plus a few other little headlines that have popped up today as well, haven't they, Andy? Hey?
Yeah,
hey?
Well, we'll get to that. Hey? We'll get to that load of nonsense later. Something we spoke about last week is continuing to excite the Brighton fans and potentially concern the Palace fans, but we'll come back to that later.
Okay, fair enough. So what are we going to do first?
Well, do you know what I thought? I just talked about kind of closing the door on last season, but if we don't mind, I'm just going to put my foot in that door and keep it open for just a little bit longer, because I don't think it would be right for us to kind of move on and talk about the future until we've done a quick review of what's just happened. Because we've, over the period of the last, I don't know, 8-9 weeks, we've reviewed the game since the podcast started. Yeah. We've looked at the pros, the cons, all that kind of stuff. But really, we haven't kind of looked at it from an overall opinion, bird's eye view, as it were.
Fair point.
So it's time to break down the 2024-25 season in classic Seagull Eagle style, Neil.
Looking forward to this.
We've put together 10 quick-fire questions.
Okay.
Right, so for both clubs. Same question, 10 of them for both clubs, given a no-nonsense summary of the season that's just been.
Mm.
And we'll go straight on to what I think is a key question. Are you
go
ready,
on,
Neil?
Yeah, let's do this. I've got a little bit of homework. I know you sent them to me earlier, and I'm like, I'm eager to go. So let's do this. We're going to talk about, well, let's take turns then, shall we? Shall I go first?
Yeah, okay.
Go on, hit me. What's the first one?
So the first one is key performer. Right? Who were the standout players in your opinion? So not necessarily, you know, who won all the club awards or whatever it would be, but in your opinion, who was the standout players from Brighton last season?
Okay. Well, this one was probably the easiest one of the lot. I've picked two. Hope that's okay.
Yeah.
First one is pretty obvious because he did win all the awards, I'm afraid to say. I couldn't leave him out. And that's Jan-Paul van Hek. He was a colossus this season. He's been slowly growing into that role more and more. He was great last season, but this season he's taken over the mantle of our leader, I would suggest now. Mm. He really is. And he's had a fantastic season. One of the stats I saw the other day was he actually was number one in the whole of the Premier League for most ball carries.
Oh, wow.
So he ran the furthest with those carries as well. In other words, he's taking that ball and moving the ball and moving the play forward in a positive way. So
attacking defender.
Yeah, exactly. So that's van Hek, definitely, for me. The awards don't lie. Brilliant performance this year. Definitely a standout player. And the other one, someone who I hope doesn't disappear this summer. I don't think he will. Carlos Baleba, a real coming-of-age season and just showed his immense strength, skill, talent that he's got. He's still got areas to work on, but overall, fantastic standout player. And I think those two shone above most of the others. Honourable mentions for a few others, but I'll just say those two in particular for mine, key performers and standout players.
Great. I feel like we should maybe send them something in the post.
I will. I'll send them a copy of this podcast.
Brilliant.
Yeah, they always Super. Ignore me, but I keep trying.
Okay. All right. Restraining order coming your way. Right. So for Palace, I struggled with this, Neil. I struggled with this. And if you'd have asked me in previous seasons, I probably would have struggled in a different way. But for this year, it's been actually quite tricky answering some of these questions because I think this year, I don't think we've had one or two outstanding players. I think we've certainly got players that everyone talks about.
Sure.
And the ones that are kind of the fan favourites or always hit the headlines. But to actually look at who were the standout players on the pitch is a different matter. The first one, funny enough, is similar to yours, actually. He did win the award this year. He won two of them, in fact. It is Muñez. And obviously he's been absolutely brilliant on the right wing this season, and he's a tireless runner, and as we spoke about in previous podcasts, he just always wants the ball. He's got his hand up and is always in space and always giving everyone options up the pitch, which is what you want for that forward pass.
Yeah.
He's had a total sprinting distance of over 2 miles more, right? 2 miles more than any other Premier League player this season.
He sprinted 2 miles more
over the course of the season than any other player.
That is a stat.
And if you sit and watch a game in its entirety, certainly when I sit and watch it at the stadium, he's right in front of us.
Sure.
And all it's literally like watching a tennis match. It's like ga-ding, 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 ga-ding. Like he's up and down. It's brilliant. So he's been in fantastic form this season. And to be fair, continued where he left off after he joined last season. His impact was instant in this team. He's played 46 games across all competitions, scoring 6 times and also registering 8 assists. So that's not bad for like a wing back on the right.
Oh, absolutely.
Really, really good. And I think the great thing I like to see this season is that he had a good few attempts on goal last year, but didn't quite get it right. You know, that whole kind of leaning back when you're hitting it thing because he's running so fast. But I feel like he's got his confidence and he's scored some crackers this year, which has been wonderful. Not only has he been exceptional going forward, he's also been immense defensively. Obviously, 17 clean sheets in those 46 games. I know he's not the keeper, but he contributes towards that.
Absolutely.
And he's recorded more completed tackles than any other Premier League defender last season.
Wow.
123 in total, which is just phenomenal. He also, which is the main reason he's in this pole position for me right now, scored the winner against Brighton at Selhurst Park.
And there it is.
Which it was a big moment for him. And that's the kind of game, like them derby games, rival games, whatever you want to call them, he's the kind of player you want on the pitch. Like,
yeah,
he's
absolutely
just up for it. And then, of course, a bit more of a kind of shortened review for this one, because there's probably no surprise here, but Eze does make my list on this one. He is the obvious choice because he's the one that's in all the media. But you know as well as I do, I've had my beef with him this year.
Oh, yeah.
And I felt like He had a very short injury in the middle of the season, took a while to come back from that. But then also, obviously, he had a really slow start to that season coming out of the World Cup, and he just didn't seem himself, lacking confidence and so on. So I guess for me to include him in this, it means that the end of the season must have been immense, which of course it was, right? Mm-hmm. He's played 43 games. He's scored 14 goals. He's had 26 goal involvements in all competitions, which is a hell of an achievement. His goal involvement equates to a 0.55 per 90 minutes, which means you get a goal every 2 games from the guy, right? Which isn't bad. Not for a midfielder. Even though he's frustrating to watch sometimes, at the end of the season, it was exciting to watch.
What's the next one then?
Right, question number 2 in the test. Who was under the radar for you? Kind of like a silent hero, as it were.
This one was an interesting one for me. I had a good think about it. And I think silent hero probably is what came to mind when I thought of this player. And I'm going to go with Adam Webster.
Oh.
Adam Webster came in for the injured either Dunk or Van Hek at points throughout the season. Let's do a little history lesson. The last few seasons, he is incredibly inconsistent. He always looks like a player that's prone to the one big mistake in a game or something like that. He's had really good games and then suddenly a terrible game and then he's lost his place. Or vice versa, where he's not been fit enough, match fit enough. He takes three or four games to get good, if that makes sense. So therefore, he doesn't have really good performances to start. So he tends to lose his space again. Mm. This season, he came in. He actually ended up playing 14 times in the league.
Okay.
And every time he came in, he was immense. It did not look like we'd lost our, let's say, first choice defensive line at all. I was so impressed with his concentration levels, his ability to take the ball. Obviously, he was never in doubt, but his ability to defend, to actually go into midfield, stop the ball and get hold of it and move it on was fantastic. A couple of stats for him, 14 appearances, but 10 wins, 2 draws.
So, oh, wow. So he lost 2 games.
There you go. Fantastic performance. Particularly under the radar because he's just not someone that stands out that much.
Mm.
But when he came in, there was pure continuity and I thought he was fantastic. So that's my silent hero, as it were.
Oh, great squad member then to be able to rely upon.
100%, yeah. Super. I hope he stays, but we'll see.
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, again, this was a really difficult one, right? Because I think in a season where there were big achievements made, right? Highest points title, FA Cup, blah, blah, blah. I won't go on about it too much in this episode, I promise. But there are moments where this person has been celebrated, mm-hmm. right? But I've kind of looked at this in the opinion of, like, there are players that are currently being courted and in the news at the moment, which is half our squad, right? Which
yeah,
is...
Sure.
You know, Man United wants them, Bayern Munich wants them, Newcastle want them, Tottenham want them, whatever it would be, right? Whereas this player somehow, for me, maybe I'm wrong in terms of my opinions, but for me, kind of feels like he hasn't got involved in that kind of media circus and he just goes on and plays. And I feel like he's really got his rewards this year and being able to have his moments is Sarr, right?
Oh, okay.
Now, when he first signed for us, he took on the number 7 shirt.
Mm.
And obviously that was Elise's shirt, right? And it was like, it's a big deal for someone's take on, you know, Elise's shirt, probably he's up there with the icons like Zaha and all that. And obviously going to Bayern Munich and proving his worth and all that. It's like, okay, so you're carrying on his role. You are the replacement for that man that we've just sold.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
And he's quietly gone about his business, not made a fuss about it, and he's worked out how to be a success under the pressing game that Glasner plays and has basically just really, really worked out how to be a part of that team and contribute towards the team.
Sure.
And as he's done that over time, his rewards didn't come instantly at the beginning of the season. But over time, he's now starting to get himself in them positions to be able to make the most of it, get the goal involvements and so on.
Mm.
And actually, this guy has created more chances than all the other people that are in the headlines. But for some unknown reason, maybe he hasn't got the swagger to go with it or the words or what, I don't know what it is. For some unknown reason, he just goes about his way. So, yeah, as I said to you, he's created more chances than any other Palace player since becoming a regular. He scored 8 goals, which isn't bad, right, when you think about where we're at right now.
Yeah, sure.
And he's had 14 goal involvements. So the goals are coming from all different angles and he's averaged nearly a shot per game, which is good. And 1.5 key passes per game, which just shows you when you look at the actual style of play that we're playing, that kind of key pass is all you need to go from defence to attack really, really quickly.
Oh, yeah.
And
absolutely.
He seems to be mastering that. So, yeah, I would say Sarr. I rate the guy.
Well,
I genuinely
that's
do.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough.
Yeah. Moving on then, Neil. Who's not met their potential this year? The underperformer, as it were. Or should we call it the development award?
So this is a harsh one, isn't it? Because
yeah.
When I think about the underperformer as a title, I think, yeah, I think that what you're talking about there is what's the expectation of that person coming?
Yeah.
And I picked one of our new players, and I believe that he's really struggled this season with probably with the pace and the physicality of the league. He did have an injury right at the beginning, though, which caused, I think, a lot of problems to sort of have to then try and catch up halfway through the season, and that is Matt O'Riley.
Oh, really? Do you know what? I could have sworn you were going to go for Dunk for this one. I don't know why.
Matt O'Riley, for me, if you think about what happened the previous season, he was at Celtic. Now, I appreciate Celtic isn't the Premier League, the Scottish Premiership, but he had a season where he scored, last season, 20 goals, 20 assists in 52 appearances.
That's some going.
Isn't it? And his seasons before that are pretty good too. So in other words, I appreciate that's not going to translate exactly to the Premier League, but still, you would have expected more than what he currently has, which is 2 goals, 2 assists.
Mm.
But he hasn't played that much either. And I think that's a question mark that I have around what was the reason for signing him? What normally Brighton are very good at signing players, as we all know. Was this a decision that we'd already made? We were going to bring him in no matter what because it was just a good value for money in the market. Does he fit Fabian Hertzler's style and play is a next question mark, because he's been fit for quite a few weeks and Fabian hasn't played him. He's been on the bench a lot. It's only in the last few weeks when Jorginho Rutter got injured and João Pedro was out that he started playing in that 10 role. But then Brajan Gruda has come in, and he's probably outperformed O'Riley in that position as well. So it's a question mark. I would say he's had a difficult season this season. So my expectation of him is what I'm going on. I had an expectation that he would be different to how he is. So therefore, I'm saying that he is an underperformer this season. I haven't given up on him, to be clear.
No, of course.
But there are a few rumours out there that Everton are interested in him and all this sort of stuff as well, which to me begs the question, there's no smoke without fire. So maybe, you know, there's a little bit of unhappiness there somewhere. But and I can understand that. He's not playing, you know what I mean? So
is he playing in central midfield for Celtic? He can't have been.
He was, yeah, they were playing, well they sort of play like, depends on how they played, but they were playing in a 10 position or a right-sided 10. So he wasn't literally central midfield. He was more of the attacking end. And to be fair, when he's coming on for Brighton, he's playing in that 10 role. So that's what he's been playing.
He scored 20 goals.
20
in that,
goals,
in
20
that
assists.
Position is phenomenal.
Isn't it?
I mean,
yeah.
You'd think maybe that's an overachievement for a season, potentially.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
I'm not sure that Fabian Hertzler is quite as sure about him as maybe I thought he was going to be this season.
Yeah.
So we'll have to wait and see. I hope that he rises to the occasion next season, but certainly this season, he struggled. What about you then? What about Palace? Who's not met their potential this year?
Do you want to guess?
I probably can. Was it a lad that you got from Arsenal?
It might have been. Yeah. I feel bad because I don't want to be one of them guys. I don't want to be one of them guys that just kind of kicks a man while he's down. But I guess he's not fully down, is he? Because he got halfway back up again before he fell over. But look, yeah, Eddie Nketiah. I think under the same kind of approach as you, what I'm not saying is that Eddie's a bad player and I don't like him and I want him to leave, right? Mm. That's not what I'm saying. In terms of expectations versus reality, I think even Eddie will tell you he has not hit what he wanted to hit for us, right? There's no way that he can have. He signed for big money, right? Big money, big expectations come with that. And all the hype around him was that he was going to be the new Ian Wright and, you know, that style of play and so on. Granted, we changed our style of play pretty much as when he came in. And I think he's been on our list and been rumoured to be coming to us for years.
Yeah.
And we know that there's a lot of kind of rumours that don't end up coming off. But I think them rumours, a lot of these rumours are made from somewhere, right? They're on someone's list.
Oh,
someone's seen the list. So we kind of knew he was coming in. He just hasn't had the impact overall, really, apart from a few games in the cup where he's had a chance. But a lot of that was against lesser opposition.
Right.
And
okay.
Of course, in the Wolves game, I was just about to go into a rant that night about him and how, you know, he was underperforming. Then he went and scored two reasonably good goals for us.
That was funny, I have to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. I literally text you as the first one went and went, change of plan for tonight. anyway, look, I think to summarise, I think he's been too easily pushed off the ball. I genuinely hate how easily he goes over. Mm. Like there is no need to do that. Like I see that kind of behaviour at kind of, well, Sunday kids football is the truth of the matter. This sounds harsh, but you do, like, the lightest of touch and you go flying, you make the most of it and you stay down, all that kind of stuff. I don't think he's particularly adapted to the style of play. And the most frustrating thing, especially when you've got a striker who's replacing someone on form like Mateta, yeah, coming on clearly for minutes at the end of a game, or like 60, 65, 70 minutes, and he gets his 25, 30 minutes on the pitch. And the first thing he does every single game is drift offside. And you're like, this is your job, my friends. Yeah, do you know what I mean?
It's going to frustrate everyone, isn't it?
Oh, so annoying. So I just feel like he doesn't always turn up. Mm. And maybe there is an element of discontent in terms of this was meant to be his move to build his career back up and potentially then make his way back up to another bigger club, as it were. Yeah. And I don't think he's putting in the work rate or adapting to the system consistently enough. You don't know what you're going to get when he comes on. He has got goals in him. We know he's got goals in him. I'm just not convinced right now. And it's funny because lots of my friends who are Arsenal fans were never really convinced on him, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll move on. Sorry, Eddie. Right, next one is, what was your most memorable match? Which match stands out for you last season more than most?
It's quite a few to think about this season, if I'm on, or last. Is it this season or last season? Do you know? What do you say at the moment? What are we at? Are we at last season yet, or are we still this season?
Well, I mean, technically it can't be this because it's not happening, is it? So no, I guess it's...
I suppose it is last. It just feels wrong sounding like that when it was last week. Last season, my most memorable match isn't probably going to be one that a lot of people are going to suggest. So this match, we lost. Andy's looking at me.
Didn't see it going this way.
You're
okay.
Perplexed, aren't you? My most memorable match was Liverpool away. It was back in November. Andy's like, what the hell are you going on about, Neil? And yet we lost. We lost 2-1. But that performance that I saw out there was the one reason and the one thing that kept me going through this whole season before it got to sort of the last five games where we started playing really well again. But through the dark days of winter, January, February, March, where we had that real inconsistency, the performance level on that day, I thought, was at its highest since I'd seen peak De Zerbi.
Okay.
And the reason, I don't know what the reason is. All I can talk about is what actually happened that day. Interestingly, we didn't have Carlos Baleba on the pitch. We had a midfield of Ayari and Hinshelwood. And they were there purely to just keep the ball moving as quickly as possible. And they worked so hard in the middle. One key player was on that pitch that wasn't on the pitch for the rest of the season. Ferdi Kadioglu.
Mm.
He scored the first goal and he was fantastic.
Yeah, because you went 1-0 up, right?
Exactly. And the movement, the passing, the play was just fantastic. I actually went to that game as well and I was there. And I couldn't believe the level. So we ended up with more possession than Liverpool at Anfield. We outpassed them. We had the same, if not more, shots as well. We were fantastic that day. Liverpool were obviously very good and they got out of jail a little bit on that day. And I just thought we were fantastic. And the reason I'm bringing that up, as I say, is because I just thought that game, having watched it, I came away going, wow, if we can play like that the rest of the season, we seriously have a chance of being in the top four or five. It didn't materialise and lots of things happened, lots of injuries and other things. But that game gave me hope and gave me real excitement about putting those players on that pitch and getting the ones that were fit actually on the pitch and seeing what happens. So yeah, for me, Liverpool away, appreciate it's a strange one, but it was really good.
Yeah, but this is about your opinion, yeah, and the fact that you were there as well and you witnessed it. And it, yeah, look, I absolutely get it and I can relate to that, you know, because when Palace were going through that horrid run at the start of the season where, you know, we literally couldn't buy a win, and there was a couple of games that we lost there that I remember saying to my son actually on the way out, and I'm like, actually, that was a really good game. And he's like, are you insane? We lost. And I'm like, no. We're not going to continue losing for much longer, Harry. Just stay with me, mate. Do you know what I mean? So I totally get it. I absolutely get it.
Okay.
I think from my perspective, I think you probably know what the answer is, the obvious one. However, it's not that, actually. For me, on a personal note, it was actually the FA Cup semi-final. And I think it was how we overran Villa. And I walked into Wembley with a fear of Villa for some unknown reason, even though we got a good record against them. But it was like, we don't win at Wembley and we don't win against the big clubs. And it's going to come down to penalties or someone's going to get sent off or whatever. And then to be there at that moment, in that environment, and to comfortably win. I've never sat through a match and had... Well, being surrounded by surrealism, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, it just didn't feel real. And that's just a wonderful moment as a football fan, isn't it? Where you're almost pinching yourself because, and I know it was Villa, right? It's not, they're not like Barcelona or something, but it was a really convincing win. And we played so well, such confidence. And of course, it goes back to the man that I was talking about earlier. Sars Brace was lovely to see. And the build-up play, that's the bit of it that I love. Sure. I actually kind of enjoy the build-up play more than the actual tap into the net or whatever be. So I think that was the big one for me. And of course, the double over Brighton with the 3-1 win away from home.
Is that another game you're talking about? No, we can't talk about that.
Okay, no worries.
Let's get a move on, actually, because we're going to go on and on and on otherwise about this whole bloody season. If you can talk about FA Cup anymore, I'm going to...
It's all right, cheer up, Neil. It's going to be fine. Here's one you're going to like.
Oh, yeah.
Managerial impact. What strikes you as the big change from last season?
This was possibly the hardest question out of all of them. Yeah, because I don't know.
Oh.
And that's the irony of it all. I'm not sure I can answer that yet.
A tactician such as yourself.
Yeah, which is interesting, isn't it?
Oof.
I've been questioning it all season in that what actually has Fabian Hertzler brought to this team? And that's the question. And I looked at it and I thought long and hard. And I think the only thing I can probably grasp on so far is he's been a very good babysitter. He's had lots of new young players and he's blooded them and got them into the team and started getting them playing. I think the one major piece of work that he's worked on this season more than anything is building a mentality.
Okay.
So rather than tactics, I think it's more around the mindset of the players. I hear a lot of his talks when they show them on YouTube around the dressing room after the game and things like that. And some of the things he really builds into the players is about the level of hard work that you need to put in every day, not just on the Saturday. And I think that's some of the work that he's been working on this season. There's been clearly problems during the season where we've lost leads and we've had problems with our mentality in that sense. So I think... there's no huge formation changes or lots of, there's a bit of tinkering maybe, but generally speaking, I think it's more around the mentality and the professionalism and trying to get them to a point where they're starting to really work as a team. And I think that's the real impact as such that the new manager has had. We've had so many injuries this season that I think that's probably what stopped him making any bigger changes that maybe he wanted to, perhaps.
I would say so.
And I think it feels like, maybe in the close season now, he may be in a position now to start making bigger changes and actual physical changes to the squad, to the formation, to the tactics, possibly. Looking at some of the signings that we're possibly going for and some of the ones that are signing things, I would wonder, it's a bit early, so I'm going to go very early here, but I'm wondering whether we might see a back three next season. And so that will be interesting. But I think mentality is the main thing.
Interesting.
What about you? What about Glasner?
Well, obviously, he joined partway through the season before, right?
So he's had 1.5 seasons.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got a really good glimpse of a very different style of play to Roy Hodgson, as it were, last season.
I mean, we're talking pretty much... opposites that first bit, wasn't it? Because they were on fire when he first came in.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And it was very weird because there was that whole kind of sitting behind the ball and defending hard, but we had the exciting bit to go with it.
Mm.
So it was quite hard to kind of adapt your watching style to that because you thought it was all going to go wrong and it just got better. It was a very weird kind of situation.
So what about this season? What do you think it's
impacted? I think that the big thing for me is the intensity and work rate of which we're playing. That I love the pressing style, right? I love the fact of how comfortable we are without the ball after having genuine fear of giving it away in the past. Now we're letting them have it and waiting for them to make a mistake, which is just wonderful to watch. I think the philosophy from Glasner, listening to a lot of interviews and kind of... just lots of media about Glasner recently. Mm. I re-listened to a really good podcast. It was probably about an hour and a half's worth of what is your philosophy in the game, Oliver Glasner, and how do you get the performance out of the team? And it's a really well-known podcast. Do feel free to listen to it. It's a great listen if you haven't. What I got out of that was that he doesn't judge the players on winning or losing a game.
Mm.
He doesn't put pressure on them to win a game. He puts pressure on them to perform as a team.
Sure.
So after, in the change room at the end, he will say, how did we perform as a team? How did you support everybody else? How did you play the system that we play as a team effectively?
Mm.
And how were you able to express yourself within that system? And that's kind of the approach, which kind of explains some of the conversations we were having last week about when people kind of broke the rules and went a bit rogue and tried to take on a few extra people and all of that kind of stuff. So really, really interesting. I think the biggest thing for me though, Neil, I alluded to it earlier, we're no longer a side dependent on one player. The days of, do you remember we used to have them stats, right? Which was like Palace with Zaha.
Yeah.
Palace without Zaha. And obviously the latter wasn't particularly pretty. Now, people will openly say, oh, it's all about Eze. Oh, it's all about Mateta. Oh, hang on. No, it's all about Water. No, it's all about Gaye. No, it's all about Sarr. No, it's all... And actually, when you start looking into that squad, like I had to do for this little thing we're doing here, I'm like, we've got a really good squad.
Sure.
And we do have a bit of depth now. And I struggle to name my player of the season. It could have been genuinely five or six. Bearing in mind, I haven't even mentioned Mateta yet.
Mm.
Right? So that just shows you something.
Yeah, he's had a big impact, hasn't he, on that whole work ethic and that team cohesiveness.
Oh, massive. Absolutely massive. And we've got an identity. And I like that. I like the counter-attacking style. I like how quick we break. And I like the fact, Neil, that we got the players to do it now for the time being.
Absolutely. Right, what's next?
How did the new signings perform?
Oh, blimey, I haven't got an hour. We had so many, that's the problem. So what I've done here is I've gone with the six that we bought and played and that played some. So I touched on Ferdi Kadioglu earlier when I was talking about the Liverpool game. That was one of the few games that he did play. He ended up playing six, unfortunately. And I think he's around about fit now, which is great, isn't it?
Fantastic. Good for next year, though.
Good for his holidays. So yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing him. So I'm giving him a 5 out of 10. O'Reilly, talked about him. I'm keeping as a 5 out of 10 as well. Brajan Gruda had a slow start, but recently has really come into the team and started to show his worth and his possibility, his potential, giving him a nice 6 out of 10. I think he's had a good end to the season. Matt Swiefer, another one, slow start, didn't have much sort of opportunity to play. I think they were trying to acclimatise him to the Premier League. Put him in at right back. Lo and behold, he's getting a little bit of the flavour of what it's like. He's starting to put in some really good performances. Put him at 6 as well, but I'm looking for more next season. And then our top two performers, probably, you'd have to say Yankuba Minte. Obviously, we got him from Newcastle. He's ended the season on 6 goals, 4 assists. He's 20 years old, and he's had a really good season. you could tell his improvement through the season as well. He's had the opportunity to play for a start, which is good compared to some of the others. They've actually played him. He has growth that it has space to grow, and he has a few things he needs to work on, in particular his choice, his decisions that he makes, and maybe even I would go as far to say he needs to slow down sometimes, ironically. He's so quick that he trips himself up, you know, that sort of thing. Last but not least, So Minta, I'm giving him an 8 out of 10. I think he's been really good. But giving a 9 out of 10.
Oh, Neil, who is it?
Jorginho Rutter. And I think this is based, again, on my perception and my expectation. We paid a lot of money for him, for Brighton. It was our highest ever fee. We paid Leeds the money, which was felt wrong, giving Leeds the money, which is ugh. Anyway, and I wasn't expecting what I got. I was expecting someone different. When he turned up, one, he's a breath of fresh air. His personality, he breathes life into the squad. He makes things light, fun, but in a positive way.
So important.
I agree. And when he's on the pitch, he is ugly to watch. Do you know what I mean?
He
is gangly. He stoops down. He is not someone that you would look at and go, what an elegant player. But what he is effective. And now I understand why Brighton bought him. His ability to be on the ball and just get past players, beat players. This game against Spurs, where we were 2-0 down and came back to win 3-2, was mainly down to him and his ability to just go past players when they think they've got him. So tight spaces, all that sort of stuff. And we really missed him in the end of the season. I know we won the games, but the way that we played really missed him. 5 goals, 3 assists, doesn't quite tell the story, in my opinion. I think he's been excellent, and I'm really looking forward to him next season. How many sort of new signings did you actually have in the end? For
A few more than I'm about to mention.
Okay, but, what have you gone for?
Well, we got Chaddy Riyad. Have you heard of him?
No.
Right, they're not surprised because...
You're going to give him a mark out of 10?
I haven't done marks out of 10, even though we are kind of on the school subjects here today, doing tests and marks. But no, yeah, Chaddy, bless him. He was signed over last summer, and I think he had one FA Cup appearance. I saw him at pre-season on some of the pre-season friendlies that I went to, and he looked really good.
And what is he?
He's a defender.
Right.
He's kind of centre-back, but he can kind of play left or right of the centre-back. But he will be really, really good. He's got great pedigree, and... he is bought to play our system.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So the only problem is
getting him in sort of slowly, maybe.
Well, no, he's been injured ever since he's joined.
Oh, okay. So he's a Ferdy Cadioc.
He's literally been on the payroll and played one game.
Okay.
I think he's played one FA Cup game, and I think he played a game early on in the season. So do I think he would have potentially had an impact this season? I think he would have had a chance, but to be fair, with the likes of Richard doing so well and coming in and absolutely smashing it, and one of our other new signings just absolutely smashing it, I think he probably would have been playing back up anyway.
Sure.
But he's good because when you've got a player you haven't really played yet, when he comes back, he's like a new signing.
Yeah, tell me about it, mate. I'm thinking the same thing. Who else you got on the list?
Well, Saar came in.
Good point.
Right. And obviously, as above, what we've just talked about, he's been superb. Mm-hmm. And bearing in mind what we made out of Elise and what we spent on Saar, I mean, that is a great bit of business, right? So brilliant. And Nketiah, as we've just discussed.
Move on.
a lot of work to do, bless him. But I think he has got a place. Lacroix. Now, this guy came in when Anderson left to go to Fulham. And this guy is a machine, Neil. Like, Lacroix is solid at the back, even when Gaye was injured, right? Everyone was like, oh, Gaye's out, it's all going to go wrong now. And it's like, actually, no. He is in the same league, in my opinion.
Right.
And he is built for this
system. That's a big call, by the
way. It is. Okay. I genuinely believe it. And I think another season in the Premier League will prove that. I love how comfortable he is on the ball. I love how he's afraid not to push up and play the ball forward. He'll take it all the way from pretty much the goal line and take it to the halfway point. And you know when like the midfielders are like, oh, do I go to him? Do I not go to him? He just keeps going. Sure. And then he'll play a brilliant forward ball. His long balls are great. The fans love him. He's got a great connection with the fans as well. So I really rate the guy. I think he's one of our best players at the club. And luckily, not many people are talking about him, which is wonderful. Give him another season, he'll be linked with everyone. And then the final one is Essay, right? So Romain Essay, he joined us from Millwall. He's got such a bright future. Such a bright future. I'm really, really looking forward to seeing him next year. And we discussed what happened at the end of the Liverpool game, didn't we, with him, where he didn't stick to the plan and he lost the ball. And then Glasner came out at the end and didn't mention him, but he mentioned him.
Yeah.
And obviously there was that lovely moment actually that happened that I didn't realise that I saw in the media the next day after we recorded, where Mo Salah went up to him and kind of...
That was lovely, wasn't it?
Consoled him and he didn't have to do that, did he?
You could just see him. He's just having a little chat about it. He's obviously picked him out and realised what had happened. And I think, as I said to you last week, it's happened to most players at some point in their career, and it's just an embarrassment and it's something you have to work on. But really good of Mo Salah showing his class.
Lovely. And what better way to get over that disappointment than jump on an open top bus the next couple of days? So I think, you know, look, I'm hoping that we know this kid can take the ball past two or three players. He's a kid and he just needs to learn which two or three players to attempt that on and get confidence. I see him, if he carries on developing like he is at the rate he is, he could be the next Zaha, the next Eze. And I think that is what the club have seen in him. And let's be honest, over the last 3 or 4 years, we haven't got a bad record in picking them out.
No, I agree. So,
I'm excited about him next year, and I hope he gets more opportunities.
Yeah.
There we go. Right, moving on then. Youth coming through. Who's broken into the first team this year, Neil?
For me, it was difficult with that one because youth coming through, they're all young. They're all like 20 or under by the sound of most of my squads, which is really annoying. But the one I really did pick out, happened a few weeks ago, is Harry Howell. We touched on him a few weeks back when he made his debut at just 17 years and about 20 days against Liverpool, where Hinshelwood scored the winner near the end. I'm staying around for him to see what happens next season. I'm hopeful that he will stay with the squad maybe another season and just improve his game and then maybe go out and loan the following season. He's really young, but he's playing on that right wing with a left foot. He's a talented young boy, and I'm looking forward to seeing him next season. So fingers crossed we might see a little bit more of Harry Howe.
Okay, what about interesting. You? We'll look out for him. Well, for me, it's Justin Devenny. It's a difficult one because technically I haven't really stuck to the rules here. He's now 21.
Right, okay, I'll allow it this time.
But there's a reason why I've done this, because obviously this kid has only really come into the squad properly this year, and he's been given a chance. And ironically, at Palace over the last few years, that we haven't had many youngsters. We've invested in that big academy, but we haven't had many youngsters coming through. There's a lot of people sat on the bench, and you can see some great keepy uppies before the game with the youth team, but you haven't really see them on the pitch. But he has made it through. He's played 10 times for the club after making his debut against Fulham in 2024. He's only scored one goal against Villa in his second appearance for us. Right. But the celebration to see someone come from that under-21 team where they achieved a hell of a lot in that under-21 team and won a lot. So he's got a really, really bright future for us, and you can just see the keenness to learn, and I love that.
Yeah,
and I just want to see more players coming through, Neil.
It's great, isn't it? When they're your own, it's great.
Yeah.
Okay, what's next?
Right, easy one, this. Goal of the season.
Oh, hands down for me, match of the day goal of the season, Karim Mitoma against Chelsea, jaw-dropping, full stop, move on, there isn't anybody else. It's got to be the goal of the season for everyone, even Palace supporters. Yeah, I've said it, that's right.
Just because you said it doesn't make it true, but that's okay.
Great goal for me. Just I was in the ground when it happened, and it just disbelief when you see someone plucking a ball out from that, like that, and just putting it away. Fantastic. What about you?
I believe on that one, actually. Disbelief was the word, right? I was like, what has happened here? But anyway, yes, for me, I've struggled. It was between
two. Because they're all terrible.
Actually, to be fair, they weren't. And that was the problem. Like, it's the first year. I think we talked about it last week.
You had some good ones this season,
It's the first year where we've had some to pick from, because all the goals we scored in that lovely run we went on were all, like, decent goals.
Come on, you got to pick one. Which one?
Okay.
Well, look, I mean, it's the boring choice, though. It's the one that the club picked, is the truth.
Which is?
It's Mateta's goal against Arsenal. Do you remember where we had Martin Odegaard in our pocket?
And yeah, like just, a 35-yard lob.
And he didn't even look. He nicked it off. He nicked it off, and then he chipped Raya.
Yeah,
I mean, the
was,
other one was
really good.
The other one was Eze's goal against Villa, mostly because he literally, the ball came in from the outside. He had one touch and he just rocketed it in.
I love the fact that I said pick one and you've still mentioned both.
I know.
So in that case, I was going to mention Belabor's goal against West Ham. That was fantastic.
Good. Too. I just felt bad about copying the club's goal of the season, but there's a reason why it was, right?
Yeah.
Right, next one. Okay. Oh, here we go. The biggest surprise of the year in terms of player performance.
This one actually was quite easy for me.
Okay.
Yassin Ayari. He hadn't had a look in at all. He'd been out on loan. We bought him about 2.5 seasons ago, I think, Swedish. He went out on loan a few times. He played at Coventry last season on loan, the back end of last season. Didn't set the world alight. And then out of the blue, because obviously it's a new manager coming in, you have a reset and everyone's open to getting a chance, he suddenly starts the first game of the season. And to be fair to him, he hasn't stopped from there. He's been fantastic. Yes, it's a squad game and, you know, he goes in and out. He's still young himself, but he's been really, really good as a midfielder. He's had a few problems trying to score goals. He's had a few really good opportunities through the season that became a bit of a joke eventually that he was never going to score until right near the season. And suddenly he's scored a couple now. But yeah, simple was simple. Just came out of the blue. We'd had him on the books for a while. Wasn't expecting to see him. He's blossomed. He's now a Swedish international. And I think he's got a really bright future.
Great. So for me, I'd like Eddie Nketiah to listen to this one carefully. Kamada.
Yes. Why is it a surprise, though?
Because I thought halfway through the season, well, firstly, Kamada was involved quite heavily in that poor run of form at the start of the season.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you mentioned that. Yeah.
He was relied on because half of our players have only just come back from the World Cup and the Olympics and also they'd not had a pre-season and all our signings had only just signed.
So those bad results you were thinking must be down to Kamada.
No, but what I didn't see was a passionate performance, work rate, pressing, all the other stuff. I saw a man who was trying, but I saw a man who wasn't trying his best.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
So what changed?
What changed was him getting up to pace in the Premier League, which is a big thing.
Absolutely.
He's played with Glasner before, which is why Glasner got him in. He won the Europa League with Glasner, I believe. So he knows what it takes to succeed. But the Premier League, as we all know, is a different kettle of fish, right? So I would just like to take a moment on this platform that we have to make a public apology to Kamada. Kamada, I'm sorry I doubted you. At one point, I was wondering whether there was a good player in there. I really was, along with 26,500 fans that watched that game every week with me. He's taken some stick, so much so there were times during our losing streak where Kamada came on and there were not boos, but groans.
Wow.
And
yeah, that's
bad.
Harsh. That's harsh, especially for a first season as well.
But he's our highest paid player, Neil.
Ah, okay.
He's our highest paid player and was at one point, in my opinion, putting the least amount of effort and impact onto the game. So not only has he turned it around, I think he was one of our key players at the end of this season. Really, really contributed. Fair play, Kamada. You take the rough, we take the smooth. Thank you for what you've done this season.
And the last one, number 10, what's that?
Well, it's a simple one really, Neil. Based on expectations of the season, what does the reality look like? Are you happy?
Do you know, I think I am. I think in the cold light of day now, after everything has settled, I think it's obvious that the performances were very inconsistent, especially in the first half of the season. The second half was so much better.
Mm.
It didn't feel like that, first of all, but actually when you reflect on it now, the second half of the season, when you look at how we actually played, we ended up with the best, if this makes sense, the best second half of the season we've ever had in the club's history.
Really?
19 games, 10 wins, 4 draws. So only 5 losses out of those 19 games.
That is good form.
It's really good form. I'm happy with the league position. I think in any other normal year, it would be Europe. I'm not going to talk about what happened. Thank you. But any other year, we'd probably be in European competition now in that sense. So that would have happened anyway. We've got, as I said before, second highest points tally by 1 point. We've had a good year on paper. And I think the inconsistency comes from having a young squad. So the main items to do on the manager's list, I would say, is work on transition. That's the main thing I would suggest. We scored the least number of goals on transition, 2, but we conceded the most goals on fast breaks. I think it was 10 in the league.
Mm.
So that situation we saw time and time again throughout the season, where we would have the ball high up, we'd lose it, and they'd go down the other end and score. That is a reality in the stats as well. So I think that's the big one. And that goes back to the point I was making earlier about that mentality that he's trying to grow in the team. So I am very excited for next season, but certainly that's what I would say about the reality of this season. What about you?
It's quite a simple one for me, really. I think my expectations of this season, coming off the strong end to last season and the excitement of having a new style of play and a new kind of passion to press and score exciting goals and get the most out of these attacking players, but yet with a solid defence, I was really quite optimistic going into this season. If you asked any of my friends talking about it, I was thinking, truthfully, I'm like, could we push on? Could we get to a European place? Because I'm looking at that squad going, that's probably one of the best squads we've had in terms of entirety, right? So I think league-wise, I think we got out of it what we deserved.
Where did you finish this year?
12th.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
12th. Funny enough, that 12th spot is a European spot, though, funny enough. I don't quite know. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. Finished in 12th. I would have liked to have finished in the top 10.
Sure.
Because I feel like we deserve to do that. I am incredibly optimistic for next year, though. I think if we can get some good business done early, I think top 10, if we don't get top 10 next year with the squad that we've got, I believe that would be an underachievement.
But this season, you're happy.
I'm more than happy. You've got to be, haven't you? Honestly, I'm more than happy, but more so about how we did it, not about what we did. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you, Neil.
That's all right. Thank you. We'll leave that there and we'll take a little break. See you in a mo. Welcome back, everyone.
Hello.
What should we do? Should we go through some bit of news?
Oh, it is the season for a bit of news. There's lots going on, isn't there? Not transfer news quite yet, but just general news.
Yeah, well, there's a little bit of transfer news.
Oh, go on.
Tommy Watson, remember I spoke about him last week, the Sunderland player. He's no longer a Sunderland player, as I said. He's now officially an Albion player as of the 1st of June.
Oh.
So yeah, the winger joins Albion on a deal that runs until June 2029. He's 19 years old. He's made 24 appearances last season in all competitions for Sunderland, scored 3 goals. He's going to join us, but he's actually on international duty at the moment with the under-19s. They've got a Euros championships going on. But good news for us. We've got him already through the door. So I'm very happy in that sense. It does worry me who's going out, but we'll jump onto that at some point. Any news from your lot?
No, look, Palace aren't known for doing the early transfers, are we? Let's be honest. So I think all we know right now is there's someone else leaving. Jeffrey Schlupp has now left the club.
Is that an out of contract thing or is that?
Well, he's been on loan at Celtic. So yeah, he's basically departing from us after his contract's finished. He's left the club really. I mean, he's been 9 seasons with us. So he's
really?
Yeah. He made 247 appearances for the club since joining from Leicester in 2017.
Yeah, wow.
So he's been a good servant and he's played under a few managers in that time. And I think, look, he's been a great utility player, right? He's played all over the pitch.
Sure, yeah.
And I wish him all the best. And I think the chairman doubled up on his chairman's award this year. He'd already given it to Joel Ward. And then Schluppy went, hang on a minute, I'm off too. And he went, all right, you can have one too. And quite rightly deserved. What else is going on, Neil?
I saw a very interesting story. Well, it's interesting to me. It's a little bit about financials. Tony Bloom.
Mm-hmm.
He is set to take up a 29% stake in Hearts, the Scottish Premier League club.
I heard about this on the radio. Tell us more.
So the official wording here is Tony Bloom is set to take up 29% stake in Hearts after the club's majority stakeholder group voted in favour of the owner of Brighton & Albion £10 million investment offer. It sounds like the fans were well up for it because there was a total of 6,200 odd votes and 6,112 votes in favour. So pretty much 95% people loved the idea of Tony Bloom. And why wouldn't you have Tony Bloom joining your club?
That's so, actually 10 million for 29% of Hearts.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a bargain.
Well, I don't know. Scottish clubs, they're pretty cheap. Anybody outside Rangers and Celtic, it's going to be difficult, isn't it? Everyone looks at it and thinks no one can break through. Hearts have always been a fairly big team in Scotland.
Yeah.
So for, I think, Tony Bloom to go in there is really good news for them. And it might even have a knock-on effect on Brighton as well. Building that portfolio of clubs helps us when it comes to budding young players, when it comes to work permits, lots of other things that, you know, are an advantage for us as well. So it's added to his portfolio of clubs. He's also got a Belgian club as well. And there's some talk about a few other things that he's doing. But yeah, just a little point that looks like that's going to happen over the next few weeks. So yeah, he's going to have a 29% stake in Hearts.
Well, Neil, I'm glad that good old Tony Bloom is adding to his portfolio of clubs because obviously you don't have any issues in Europe, do you?
Not yet, no.
In terms of multi-club ownership for this year. Or do you?
Well, it's come back to haunt you, hasn't it, this conversation?
I mean, call us the newsbreakers, people, because we talked about this a week ago and we did discuss it ahead of when all of the big newspapers have now picked up on it today. Because speaking as of Tuesday, the 3rd of June, around 8 o'clock at night, we're now talking about this again, Neil. And it pains me to say it, but it feels like there actually might be something in this. So those of you who don't regularly listen, we spoke last week about the UEFA multi-club ownership rules and how, obviously, Textor, one of our club owners, as part of the Eagle Group, obviously has got a share in Lyon and a few other clubs, Botafogo and so on. And obviously, because of that share, it basically says that we might be in a bit of a pickle when it comes into playing in the Europa League, because you can't have a vested interest in more than one club.
And we spoke about this and we talked about the fact that he's only got a 40-something percent in Palace, hasn't he? And that doesn't represent ownership as such in the sense of decision maker. So I'm still feeling relatively relaxed. Well, I say relaxed. I'm a Brighton supporter, but I would hope it to happen, obviously. But from your point of view, I would be relaxed about it. I don't think it's an issue.
I'm actually not now. I was when we spoke about it last week. But do you know what's happened since?
Go on.
Well, there's a few things. The first thing that's happened since is that Bromby, you know Bromby in the Danish league?
Danish team,
right? So they are also owned by one of our club chairmen.
Oh, a different guy.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I didn't take into account when we had this conversation last time. And do you know why that matters, Neil?
Go on.
Because, look at the confused look on your
really
face.
I'm really confused now.
Here we go, right? Palace finished 12th in the Premier League. You know
I'm very aware of that. I've got it on my tattoo. Yeah.
Lyon, right, owned by the Eagle Group, finished 6th in League One. Bromby finished 3rd in the Danish League.
Right.
Therefore,
I know what you're going to say.
Bromby have now got a Europa Conference League place.
And because they placed higher in the league, they take precedent. So Palace can't go. Current situation then would theoretically mean that Palace can't go into the Conference League.
Which is what would have happened.
Because Bromby are there and there is somebody on your board that co-owns. Oh, this is interesting.
So
I'm getting excited, Andy.
Okay, don't get excited because I will punch you in the face.
I'm going to check my passport and everything.
No, I won't. I'm not a violent man. So this story, which I was like, and even you, from both sides of the fence here, we were both like, this is rubbish. It's going to get sorted. So then, and that was what I was coming to the table with tonight, Neil. Before, of course, the news broke yesterday of the fact that we've been summoned for a meeting, I believe it was in Amsterdam, where we had a meeting with the CFCB,
What?
The CFCB, the board of which kind of UEFA and all of that operate on. Now, they have summoned us to put forward our case to be able to compliantly participate in the Europa League. So our lawyers, solicitors and owners went out there today to put forward our case. And I'm aware that by the time this is probably put out, there's going to be further developments. Mm. But after the meeting today, Textor was approached by the media, and this is what he said.
Oh my God, you've got a quote.
I've got a quote.
Let's do it.
It's not brilliant, Neil. We've got a quote. It says, look. So he's clearly annoyed.
That part of the quote,
he's clearly
is
annoyed
it?
Already. Right?
Oh, right, okay.
Look. All of the UK knows I don't have a decisive influence over Palace. We know that, Neil, coming off the quote. We know that because Parrish has got the voting rights and Textor hates it, right? Because he can't actually get anything through. He said it was a good meeting. They listened and we'll see what happens. And then he says, so that sounds reasonably positive. Yeah. Then he says, I wouldn't be trying to sell this stake if I didn't. What? Hang on a minute, this is a twist. Later on, he says, we're trying to help separate it all and sell.
Yeah, okay.
We wanted to buy, but it became clear that wasn't going to happen, as we've discussed before. Mm. He wanted Everton. He couldn't get Everton. And then he was like, oh, maybe I'll buy the club I've got a vested interest in.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, no, you ain't doing that. So now he's trying to sell, and he's saying, we're trying to help Palace and the situation with UEFA. That's about all I can say. From that comment, you know the bit that I got out of that? Him saying the situation with UEFA.
Yeah.
So he's referring to it as a situation. Everyone else that's talked about this prior to this moment hasn't entertained from a Palace perspective.
That it's an issue.
Yeah, do you get what I'm saying? Yeah, so that comment to me has made me worry.
I still don't... Oh God, I hate myself for saying this. I still don't think it's anything to worry about. And the reason I say that is because there are so many examples recently of owners in a similar situation that very, very quickly can get rid of their ownership of a club in, let's be honest, questionable ways.
Well, we know that the guy from Nottingham Forest put his in a blind trust.
Yeah, which makes no sense.
Yeah,
that makes no sense at all. That's just a stupid loophole. It defeats the whole object of what the purpose of this was. The whole purpose of this rule is about competition.
Of course.
It's about not making sure that you don't have two clubs that are owned by the same person, so that if something happened where they were drawn together or a result was needed by the other team or something, it's just that sports
conflict of interest,
absolutely,
isn't it?
Yeah. That's all it is. I just think it's ridiculous in the day and age where we are now, because that's going to happen even more and more. There's more clubs being bought by the same people to create this multi-club ownership, because it's useful for the big clubs to have these smaller clubs. So it's something that UEFA are going to have to look at. Palace-wise, I still think there'll be a resolution very quickly.
Well, yeah, I guess, look, the rumours in the media are saying that it's all got to be sorted out before the draw happens.
But that's a while yet, isn't it?
Well, I hope so. But I mean, look, the situation is, though, is that there were deadlines that were rumoured and talked about openly in the media about the fact that the Nottingham Forest owner only just got it done in time. Mm. And that's the sort of stuff that worries me. But more so than just kind of general anxiety about the things that I've been celebrating may not be coming off. I think that the thing that concerns me the most is, yes, this could all be absolute rubbish.
Yeah.
And complete lunacy and a media hype fueled by Brighton fans, because it's all over your social media right now. It is.
We're not fueling it.
Oh, you are. Even your own fans are telling you.
This is the rag that is the Daily Mail that is talking about it, not us.
Well, see how much it's shared by Brighton fans online.
Yeah, like you wouldn't do the same.
Oh, I absolutely would. I absolutely would. But I think my biggest issue with this is the unsettling nature internally. Right. Just put this into perspective right now. Mm. You've got a team who knows they need to do their transfer business early because we didn't last year, and look at the effect it had on the start of season. We've got a team that we need to build and expand our squad size ready for Europe. We've got money to spend. We do. Right. We've got ourselves in a position where we can do that. and we've got players whose contracts are running out and need to sign new contracts, or there's people circling. So none of this that's going on right now is helping that situation.
And I'm loving it.
It's making it worse, Neil. Do you know what? I haven't really had the opportunity to get the abuse from Neil too much in this podcast. It's all been one way.
Who thought I'd have to wait until the end of the season? Mate. It's all over. And then I'd have some sort of UEFA loophole to cling on to. It's ridiculous, but I'm loving it.
Yeah. So I just think it's very unsettling. It's not helping our plans. And let's be honest, right? You ain't going to sign for Palace yet. If you don't know you're going to be playing in Europe.
Certainly not the level of player that you want to sign.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so no, I get it.
Until all this goes away, I actually think, and the other thing is, Neil, the club have not issued a statement.
But they don't need to. There's nothing they can tell you at the moment.
Well.
What's the point of them creating a story when there isn't one from their perspective at the moment?
Well, if there weren't a story, I would hope the club would issue a statement and go, this is absolute rubbish. Don't worry, fans. Book your tickets for the Europa. Also, interestingly, we'll talk about this next week, but season tickets are going on sale tomorrow in the early window. Mm. No mention at all of what's happening with Europe.
Well, I mean... that's probably because they don't know if they're going to be in it yet, Andy.
Well, this is what I'm trying to say. Oh, help me, people.
Come on.
Am I stuck in a room with this man who's clutching at straws about a UEFA loophole?
I've always thought UEFA are fantastic.
I'll tell you what, it sums up your season if you're looking at UEFA loopholes to get into Europe.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Anyway, there we go. Let's see what happens. I'm sure by this time next week, there'll be another update on the ongoing saga of Crystal Palace in the Europa League and Brighton not. Welcome back, everybody, to the final part of this podcast. So we're going to start a new segment now, because with a new part of the yearly kind of calendar, we haven't got games to discuss, but what we have got to discuss is transfers in or out. Mm. Now, Fight or Flight is our new feature where we're going to discuss the potential doom of outgoings at our beloved clubs, Neil. Yes, we are going to pretend that we're in the boardroom making big calls, something I quite like, because we all think we own the club and someone's got to do it. So do we fight tooth or nail to keep the player, or do we shove them gently towards the airport with a thank you card and maybe even a fruit basket in tow? We'll weigh up form, value, potential replacements, and yes, of course, the emotional toll that it puts upon us, the Palace and Brighton fans, and we'll decide whether it's worth the battle to keep them or time to move on. We've both got big decisions to make, Neil.
Okay, let's do
big
this.
Decisions to make. So let's dive straight into the drama. And we'll focus this week, if it's okay, we'll focus this week on one player each that's been heavily linked away from our clubs. Who are you going to focus on, Neil?
I think there's only one place to start for me. There was a choice of two, but I'm going to go with Karu. And I'm going to say his name properly,
even though
everyone hates me when I say it. Mitomar.
Okay, well, that will help the new club he goes to spell his name right. Yes. On the back of his shirt.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What colour is that shirt going to be, though, Neil, is the question.
Well, we all know, I think, probably, that most of the interest has been from some big clubs across Europe.
Quite rightly, though.
He's fantastic. He really is. It's been widely reported that Munich have him on the list. Interestingly, that list is fairly long. I think Eze's on there as well. Gakpo, Rafael Leao. It sounds like Munich in particular are looking for two signings. They're looking for that winger, and they're looking for someone that could play up front as well, in secondary to Kane, as it were. So the Gakpo rumours, I think, is quite a good one. You could understand and see that one. The same with Rafael Leao. But Matoma's been rumoured too, and that's a worry. But realistically, to be fair to Karo Mitoma, he's always stated he wants to play Champions League. It's one of his dreams. We had a big offer from Saudi in the January window, which we declined, but we declined it mainly because we understood that, you know, the player himself didn't want to go. He wasn't interested.
That's happening quite a lot. There's a lot of big offers coming in, and mostly it's the player that goes,
And that was a bid of £75 million, Andy. So
that's ridiculous money.
I mean, I don't know. It's interesting, isn't it? He's got, if you think about his contractual situation, so he signed a
contract extension, I think, in 2023. So that means he's still got another 2 years remaining, if you think about it.
Now's the time to get big money
then.
It's
the perfect moment, isn't it? You know, he's been a great servant. He joined us in the summer of 21. He went out on loan to basically get work permit and things like that. He had a good little season there, came back. He's had 3 seasons now at Albion, 108 appearances, 38 goal involvements in total.
Oof.
But it's more than that. There's a tangible effect he has on the game.
And he's a game changer, Neil. There is no doubt about it. We've spoken about it, haven't we, in the previous weeks. He comes on and he rules the pitch.
He's just such an impact player. And I'm not talking about just coming on the pitch. He starts many, many games, obviously. But it's more the impact he has on the crowd as well.
Okay.
And I think if you asked Albion fans who is the one player that you wouldn't want to lose this season, he'd probably be at least 70% of that answer. But as I say, he's been a fantastic servant. He's done his time at Albion. He's been absolutely wonderful for us. He's clearly our best player. And I don't think I could hold it against him if he does decide to go. If we get a good enough bid, obviously. But I don't think I can hold it against him on a personal level. I can't be angry with someone who decides to move on after being so fantastic for this club, respectful, hardworking, everything. The only tint on that I would have a concern about is if he decides to go to Chelsea. That would be the one that I think most fans would absolutely hate. And I'm sure that he's more intelligent than that, to be honest. I don't think that he would do that. But we'll see. But there's certainly a lot of talk around him going. I know Arsenal are also interested, and there's a few other clubs, as I say. So it's a concern. If I was in the boardroom, Andy, if this was my choice at this moment...
What would you do, Neil?
I would wait for the right number.
What is that number?
Well, Saudis wanted to pay 75 million. I appreciate Saudi money is always going to be slightly higher bid, but anything above 65 million for me, I would say that's good value for a player that we bought and cost us £3 million. That's a fairly good investment, again, that Brighton have done. We do have players that are very young and inexperienced, so replacements for him is going to be the next question. But knowing Brighton, they've already identified two or three of those that they think they can get. And whether it will happen or not, well, we'll wait and see, obviously. But we'll probably get an indicator as to whether we're selling him, because we'll probably get the player in first who's his replacement. And that will probably tell us one way or the other what's happening. But if it was me, for the right money, yes, I would let him go on his way in a respectful way. He's done his stint at Brighton and he's been a fantastic player for us.
Get him a fruit basket?
Maybe a sushi bowl.
Okay.
See what I did there?
Nice. Okay, brilliant. Well, it's now my time to play chairman, and I...
Who are you thinking about?
Oh, I mean...
There's only one, isn't there, surely? Mate, everyone's talking about him.
I'll be honest with you, that is not the situation right now. The situation at Palace is, like, you got... I mean, to very quickly go through it, you got Mateta to Man United, Gueye to Tottenham, Liverpool, Newcastle, Arsenal, everyone in Europe, Walton linked with all the big European clubs. We'll talk about all that in the weeks to come. The one, we talk about today is Eze. He is currently, I believe, in contract talks with the club.
Oh, okay. That's surprising.
That doesn't mean he's going to sign one, though.
So what's his contract situation now?
His current deal expires in June 2027.
Oh, same as Matoma then. So 2 years left. Okay.
So we're in peak money if he's going to go.
Yep.
But there's a bit more to it than that. The rumours are, and again, they're just rumours, because how do you know? But the rumours are that he's got a £68 million release clause in his contract, which expires mid-August, 2 weeks before the window closes.
£68 million.
So therefore, someone comes up with £68 million before mid-August, technically, if he wants to go, he goes, right?
Interesting.
Now, the club's obviously desperately trying to agree a new contract now with the view of, actually, why do you need to go? What are you, if you're going to go to any of these other teams, what are they going to give you more than what we could potentially in the Europa League, unless it's one of the big teams?
Yeah.
What's the point in leaving, right? We'll just give you some more money and let's see where we're at.
Oh, I get that understanding, but who are the big teams?
Well, clubs linked at the moment.
Yeah, go on.
Tottenham.
Yeah.
Are they a big team?
I understand that they're what they call a legacy big team, aren't they, really? But yeah, all right, who else?
Well, they've got European football, though. Forest, Man United, Villa and Arsenal.
Sorry, Forest?
Apparently so. you ain't leaving Palace to go to Forest.
There's no way.
Yeah, so these are the team, and obviously you ain't leaving, I'll be honest with you, I don't think you're leaving Palace to go to Man United these days.
No.
I'm not claiming Palace are a bigger club, got more to offer in the now, potentially, than Man United have for next season, right? You're going there for the money and the prestige, potentially, but Arsenal, the latter of them that I mentioned, rumour has it, and I've watched a few interviews, he used to support them as a kid and he played for their academy.
Oh.
They did chuck him out on the street though and not give him a contract, and he cried his eyes out apparently as a kid. So that's the thing. Arsenal, and also it's another London club, probably wouldn't have to move, all that kind of stuff. He's got married this week.
So
That's the one out of them I'm a little bit worried about. But the one I'm most worried about is the Bayern Munich link.
Right, yeah.
So, they've been pushing to sign Bayern Leverkusen star Wirtz, right?
Yeah. Well, he's going to Liverpool by all accounts now.
This is what I've heard, right? So the media frenzy is saying that they've now turned their sights to Eze,
who you would argue is a very similar player to Wirtz.
Exactly. So it kind of makes sense, right? All of this starts making sense. You've got Elise, who's his mate.
Absolutely.
Who only came to Selhurst Park a couple of weeks ago, last home game of the season. He sneaked in there, sneaked back out. There was pictures of him and Eze in the dressing room.
Sure.
All that kind of stuff. Bayern have got the cash to do it. It's on a much bigger stage and a more prestige stage, actually, than a lot of them other clubs that we've just talked about,
okay.
I believe. It's a level up, right? He's got his mate Harry Kane, who's out there from the England squad as well. He's got Champions League, all of the other stuff that goes with it. I think my thoughts on this situation are thus.
You're in the boardroom, Andy. What are you going to do?
Palace are a better club with Eze than they are without Eze. The stats prove this. However, if he won't sign a new contract, Neil, I think we let him go while the money's high. Oh, did I just say that?
That hurt you, didn't it? That did.
Oh, mate, it really did. But look, you've got to look at this. And we've just spoken about Elise. Every single Palace fan, when Elise walked out that door, and they were saying, Elise's probably our best ever player, right? In terms of potential and what he could have done for that club. And we let him go and we got great money for him, which most of it we haven't spent yet.
Well, it's funny you say that, actually, when you say about money you haven't spent. The football finance expert, Kieran Maguire, who's probably well known to most people, he did a piece on the BBC website, talked about each club and the concept of looking at their finances. Do they have certain amounts of money he thinks that they would have to, they could spend and all that sort of thing. And he rated Palace out of five, as to one being the best, five being the worst opportunity to spend money. And he rated Palace as a two. And he talked about the concept that keeping a lot of their players obviously is going to be the biggest concern. So they may want to spend a lot of money on renegotiating contracts, as you've just talked about.
Yep.
But they also said that spending 100 to 150 million is within Palace's grasp this season, or this closed season. So if you think about that, plus the concept that Eze is sold for whatever amount that might be as well. That's a lot of money to spend.
And Gehi, which we'll probably talk about next week, which we're going to minimum get, I reckon, easily 60, 65 for him.
Good chance.
I think that we are in a really strong position to spend big. We've been linked with some really good players. I hope Eze decides to do a nice thing and sign a new contract and give next season a go. That's what I'm hoping comes out of this, which is that he says, I don't need to leave now. I've got an opportunity to do some great things. I'm already in the England squad. I've got a European competition coming up. I've got a chance to do some great things with my mates, right? Because I genuinely, and I know everyone likes to believe that, I do believe he loves it at this club and he's enjoying himself. He's told us that he likes playing with the players and he's able to express himself in this team.
Yeah, having European football is just such a great little carrot to wave in front of players, isn't it? So in that sense, not having to move and still playing European football is a great opportunity for him. But you, like you say, you just don't know what other little birdies are in his ear at the moment.
Mate, Bayern are in his ear. And if they come in with 68 million, I think we've got to go, thanks for your time, Eze. And we won't do a Liverpool on you, mate. Yeah. We won't boo you off. We'll thank you for your work. And how can you stop anyone going to a team like that? I would be annoyed, though, if he went to someone like Tottenham or Arsenal or any of the other such likes, because I just don't see it.
Interesting. Right. Okay, fair enough. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you, Neil. Just thinking about how I'd spend that 68 million. Tricky, isn't it?
Hair transplant?
Oh, it's getting personal now.
I prefer not to speak. If I speak, I will be in trouble.
Right, Neil, look, we've just talked about Eze and the potential of his England future and the fact he's already in the team.
Yeah.
I think you've got a bit of an update for us on the internationals, haven't you?
Well, just the fact that we do have some internationals coming up this week. We've got two England games. We've got a World Cup qualifier against Andorra. That's on this weekend. And then
Saturday, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And then we've got Senegal as well as an international friendly. I just wanted to touch on a couple of things around the squad. That was all just quickly. Obviously, the main headline was that Ivan Toney was back. He'd recalled.
Can't believe that.
I thought once you go to Saudi, you never come back. I thought that was just the deal. Like, you don't get back into the international window. But yeah, he's come back. I mean, he scored lots of goals there for Al Ahly. 28 goals in 42 appearances. But, you know, the level is a bit of a question mark. I suppose we'll see when he plays, I'm sure. Look, don't get me wrong. He's a good player, good goal scorer. I like him. He was great at the Euros and all that sort of stuff. But we'll have to wait and see.
Go in there, don't turn you into a bad player, but does it keep you up with the pace? Yeah. That's the question.
That's a really good point, exactly. Other things in the squad, Palace side of things. Mm. So there was no Gay here for obvious reasons because of his injury. I think they kept him out,
He still got one eye after the Battle of Wembley, isn't he? Bless him.
Still looking for it somewhere.
Well, he's using his one eye to look at everyone's contracts going, where am I going to play next year? But don't joke about that. we've got Henderson, who quite rightly should be in that squad, whether he's going to get a game or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
And of course, Eze, he's on fire, isn't he? So he's in that squad. But yeah, Gaye's left out and Wharton, which is I don't know how I feel about that.
I personally think that's a brilliant idea. And shall I tell you why?
Go on.
Because not only are the England first team playing, but the England under 21s have got a European Championships this summer. Don't forget they're the current holders of that as well. And Adam Wharton has been added to that squad. So he is going to play an actual tournament, competitive tournament this summer for England under 21s. And he'll be part of that squad, which I think is a fantastic idea. Get him regular football playing for England, get him win something, because that's hopefully what we'll do. They've got a great squad, that young team now in the under 21s. You think about some of the players that are in that squad. We've got, shall I read through some of the attacking players and midfielders we've got in that squad now, right? So we've got Elliot Anderson, Joe Bellingham, Archie Gray, you've got Jack Insherwood, Adam Wharton, as I said, Alex Scott from Bournemouth, then the forwards, Harvey Elliott, Liam Delap, Ethan Manieri. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of power in that squad at the moment. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that tournament, probably more than I'm looking forward to the senior squad this summer.
Mate, it's a great point, but I don't know, like, you're Adam Wharton, right? And you're getting courted by some big teams at the moment as well. You're on cloud nine. Everyone's saying how great you are. The new boss comes in. And then to go back down to the 21s, get the philosophy, get that potentially he's taking one on the chin for the country. It's not progression. You want progression, right?
I understand that. We'll see if it works. So, yeah, England.
Anyone from Brighton in the main squad?
No, of course not. We don't have many English players, to be honest.
Okay. So. No, just checking. Just
whatever. England first team, men's senior, 7th of June, Andorra, and then the 11th of June, Senegal. Right, I think that's it, isn't it, for today?
I think so, Neil. It's been a cracker of an episode. We've had a good look at what happened last year, but I think that's a wrap.
For this episode of Seagull Eagle. Make sure you hit that subscribe button to get all the alerts for the next episode, because we're continuing over the summer break. So please do subscribe. We're all over TikTok, aren't we? I think.
Oh, Facebook. We're TikTok. Oh, yeah, we're down with the kids.
Instagram.
Yep.
And X.
X.
So search Seagull Eagle and you'll find us all. And if you want to get in touch, I think you can email us as well, can't you?
SeagullEaglePodcast@gmail.com.
Oh, look at that. We'll be back next week with loads of transfer speculation, what million clubs are after our players, who potentially might or might not join us, club news, and of course that update you've all been waiting for to find out whether Palace do get expelled. Why am I laughing when I'm saying
it? Come on, UEFA! I'm nervous. Come on!
Anyway, until then, up the Eagles!
Seagull!